So the question is, how do we resolve the difference between 400 years and 430 years? Okay? So we begin right here in verse 13. And he said to Abram, "You must surely know that your seed shall be sojourners in a land that is not theirs." Notice the parenthetical statement. We will skip over it and come to where after the parenthetical statement. Okay. Now, the parenthetical phrase, and they shall serve them and shall afflict them 400 years. Now, that's not the way it reads. It reads this way, so I'm going to read it without the parenthetical statement, because the parenthetical statement is not totally part of what's being said. Okay? "And they shall be sojourners in a land that is not theirs 400 years. Okay? "And shall serve them, and they shall afflict them." Not that they were afflicted 400 years. They're going to be sojourners 400 years. Okay? You see the difference? Because if you don't realize a parenthetical statement is an inset, then you can get the chronology all messed up. All right? Now, let's come over here to Exodus 12, and we're going to read this. See, now the thing we need to understand, God does everything on time. That's why the book, The Appointed Times of Jesus the Messiah. Remember, at the appointed time, Christ died for the ungodly. At the time of fulfillment, he was born. Okay? Now, here, Exodus 12, and we have reference back to this very place that we just read. But let's notice something that's a little different. Okay? Verse 40. "Now the sojourning of the children of Israel in Egypt was 430 years. Now, anyone who does any chronological things can find out, no, they were not there 430 years. Now, we're going to solve two problems here. Number one, how do you solve the difference between the 400 and 430? Okay? You do it this way. Now, write this down. Exodus 12. Now, we're not going to turn there. Exodus 12. Abraham was called at 75. All right? Not Exodus. Genesis 12. See, you're right. I was wrong. Okay. Genesis 12, he was called at 75. Genesis 15 was the covenant given, and he was 85. Because it says at the end of one of the chapters there, that he was 86 when Ishmael was born. And that was 1 year after Genesis 15. Okay? Then we come to, so that 15 years, no, then we come to the birth of Isaac. Okay? So we have 85 years old, the promise given. Isaac is born when he's 100. Okay? Take away 85 from 100 and you have 15, correct? So write down that 15, okay? We have half of the missing 30. Now then, you come to Genesis 22, and we'll go to Genesis 22 because I'll answer another question while we are there, okay? Genesis 22, which also probably took place on a Passover, okay? Now, I just mentioned that recently, so I won't go in detail through that. Genesis 22. This is where God told Abraham to take your son, your only son, Isaac, and that means the only son of promise. Ishmael was also his son, but not the son of promise. Genesis 22. Take him over to the mountain of Moriah, which I will show you, and then offer him there for a burnt offering. Okay. Now, when we read this, we find, verse 6, Genesis 22. And Abraham took the wood of the burnt offering, laid it upon Isaac his son, a type of Christ carrying his cross. Okay? He took the fire pot in his hand, because you can't hold fire in your hand. Had to be in a pot that he was carrying. And a knife, and they both went together. And Isaac spoke to Abraham his father, and said, "My father," he said, "here I am, my son." And he said, "Behold the fire and the wood, but where is the lamb for the burnt offering?" And Abraham said, "My son, God will provide himself a lamb for a burnt offering." So they both went on together. And they came to the place of which God had told him, and Abraham built an altar there, and he laid the wood in order, bound his son Isaac on it, who was called a boy and a lad. Let's see that. Which means he was not 20. See? Because you're counted as an adult at 20. So let's read on. Now notice. Verse 10, Abraham stretched out his hand and took the knife to slay his son. And the angel of the Lord called to him from heaven and said, "Abraham, Abraham." And he said, "Here I am." And he said, "Do not lay your hand upon the lad." That means he was less than 20. So what do we pick up here by deduction? Because the 400 years cannot be wrong. And the 430 years cannot be wrong. So we have to deduce that he was 15 years old at this point. Okay? Now, you total up 75, 10, 15, and 15. You come out to 115 years. Pardon? Okay, no. It was 40 years from the time he was called until this time. Okay. Should have made it easier. Sorry for making it complicated. See. Okay. That's where you get the extra 15 years. So you have 15 from the promise to the birth. You have 15 from the birth to the sacrifice. That's 30 years. Then, from the time of the promise, it's 10 years, so you have 10, and 30 makes 40, and 40 is a time of trial. Okay? Now, one minister recently tried to explain that what we're going to read next did not apply to Abraham, but applied to Isaac. Well, how do you know it doesn't apply to Isaac? Because if it did apply to Isaac, he would have said so, because in verse 2 he said, "Take your son, your only son, Isaac." But you see, this applies to Abraham, not to Isaac. So, verse 11, the angel called out to him from heaven and said, "Abraham, Abraham," he said, "here am I." And he said, "Do not lay your hand upon the lad, nor do anything to him, for now I know that you fear God." Not Isaac. Isaac was not even at the age of accountability. He was 15. See? So it's talking about, he now knows that Abraham truly fears God. See? "Seeing you have not withheld your son, your only son, from me." And then God sent the ram as a substitute sacrifice. Okay. That's problem number one. 15 and 15 equals 30. That's how you get to 430 years. Now let's come back to Exodus 12 and read that again. And how do we answer this? Because if you ever run into an atheist who's really sharp on the Bible, he'll probably come up with this and nail you with it. Well, you can nail him right back. Okay? You can tell him, yes, you're right. It appears to be that way. Oh, and Duncan and I were talking last night. He has written a booklet for Church at Home, God, No God. He's going to see if he can work on another one that we may entitle, I Agree with Atheist 90%. See, because it's really the religion they hate. If they knew the truth about God, they wouldn't hate God, see? It's really what men do in the name of God, okay? So they'll come along if they're real sharp and say, okay, here's a contradiction in the Bible. It says 400 years in Genesis 15, and in Exodus, the 12th chapter, it says 430. Now, verse 41, and it came to pass at the end of 430 years, it came to pass on that very same day that all the army of Israel went out of the land of Egypt. Now, back up one verse. We'll read that again, verse 40. Now, the sojourning of the children of Israel in the land of Egypt was 430 years. How could that be? Because Isaac was not even born yet at the beginning of the 430 years. And he had not yet been offered, and God providing the substitutionary offering. How do you answer that? All right. Tricky question, right? Gotcha.
Yep.
All right. Come back to Genesis 15, and we can give the answer. Because when God says something, it is as good as done, though it won't happen for quite a while in the future. Okay? Genesis 15. All right. Verse 4. After Abraham said, look, I haven't had any children, so let's use Eleazar. Verse 4. And the word of the Lord came to him, saying, this man shall not be your heir, but he that shall come forth out of your own loins. Where was Isaac at the moment that he was speaking? In his loins. Got that? Isaac, Jacob, and the 12 tribes of Israel. Okay? Now let's come back here to Hebrews, the 7th chapter. Let's see something else. We can put this together in a way that also answers that question. Hebrews 7. See, how does God look at things? While we're turning to Hebrews 7, let me just say this. God says we are sitting in heavenly places now, and also in the ages to come. How are we sitting in heavenly places? Because we have the Spirit of God, and the Spirit of God is here with us, and he is teaching us spiritually. See? Okay. But we are not literally there yet, but we will be. Just like Isaac had not been born, all the children of Israel had not been born, Isaac and Jacob had not been born, nor the 12 sons. But notice what it says here in Hebrews, the 7th chapter. Now, this is talking about tithing, okay? All right. So he says here, verse 5. Let's pick it up in verse 5. On the one hand, those from among the sons of Levi who received the priesthood are commanded by the law to collect tithes from the people, that is, from their brethren, even though they all descended from Abraham. Now notice, all descended from Abraham. But on the other hand, he who was not descended from them received tithes from Abraham and blessed him who had the promises. Now it is beyond all doubt that the inferior is blessed by the superior one. And in the first case, men who die receive tithes. In the other case, he received tithes of whom it is witnessed he lives forever. Now notice verse 9, which is the key. How did they sojourn 430 years? And in one sense, Levi, who received tithes, also gave tithes through Abraham, for he was still in his forefather's loins when Melchizedek met him. All right? God was speaking of the whole thing as if it were one long sequence in Egypt. Because Abraham went into Egypt, Isaac did not go into Egypt. Jacob finally went into Egypt. Joseph went into Egypt. The rest of the 12 tribes came, remember, during the famine and all that sort of thing. Okay? But it's all counted as one block of time by God, because they were in the loins of Abraham, their forefather. Okay? You know, Levi didn't say, knock, knock, hey, great-grandfather, you know, what do you want down there, Levi? I want to tithe. You do? Okay, I'm going to Melchizedek now. You can do it. See? No. God does it that way. Okay. Okay. Covered both of those. Now, in this book you're going to receive, and I think in about 2 weeks, it talks about all the appointed times as it pertains to Jesus the Messiah. Some of these things are in harmony, which are also in the Passover book and the day Jesus died. But these are presented in a little different manner, is that these all apply to Jesus Christ. Okay. Now, come to Matthew, the first chapter. Come to Matthew, the first chapter. We're going to talk about Jesus' birth here in just a minute. And I think we're going to find some very interesting parallels concerning the days of the week. Okay? Now, it said that Christ came at the fulfillment of the time, Galatians 4. Now, let's read the last verse in Matthew, the first chapter. Matthew 1, verse 25. But he, that is Joseph, did not have sexual relations with her until after she had given birth to her son. Now notice, the firstborn. I know the King James says her firstborn, but the Greek says the firstborn. And I know that the King James says a virgin, but the Greek says the virgin. Any virgin, but the singular, particular virgin called Mary. Firstborn, all right? Jesus was born of the flesh, correct? All right? Now, come back here to Revelation, the first chapter. Revelation, the first chapter. And let's see what else it also says about Jesus. This also helps answer the question, when are you born again? See? Now, this will really throw all of your Protestant friends into a tither. Okay? You can use these two verses. You can ask them, does it say he was firstborn? Yeah. Does this mean he was born of the flesh? Yes. See, you get them involved in answering. See? Now, let's pick it up here. Okay? Okay, Revelation 1 and verse 5. From Jesus Christ, the faithful witness, notice, the firstborn from the dead. And then you ask him the question, was he the firstborn from the dead? See, now you've already paved the way for answering about souls not going to heaven. Okay? What do we have? Jesus was born of the flesh, correct? You agree? All right. He was born from the dead. It says firstborn, so Jesus was born again. Firstborn in the flesh, firstborn from the dead. This proves when you're born again, when you're born from the dead. Had nothing to do with baptism. Has nothing to do with believing in the Lord. You're already born once, aren't you? Yes. Now, if you don't have a birth certificate, you don't exist, so just never mind. Okay. Yes. Okay. So there you go. Jesus was born in the flesh. He was born from the dead. Now, pay careful attention. Pay careful attention. You'll find it in the book. Jesus had to have been born on the Feast of Trumpets in 5 B.C. Couldn't be any other year. Okay? 5 B.C. That day was the Feast of Trumpets, which occurred on a weekly Sabbath. So Jesus was born on a weekly Sabbath, also a high day, and the Feast of Trumpets pictures what? The coming of Christ. Was he the Christ? Okay. He was born on the holy day, the weekly Sabbath. Okay. When was he raised from the dead? Because now you have his first birth on the Sabbath. You have his born again when? When was he raised from the dead? On the weekly Sabbath. Does God do things on time or not? Isn't that something? Parallel. Amazing. All right. Now I'll tell you about another one, but we'll go back and we'll pick up the details on it. Okay. And Carl Franklin did all the research on the kings of Media and Persia and Babylon and Assyria. That's the only way you can straighten out the time frame of Ezra and Nehemiah. Okay. The Messiah was said, and we'll go back and read this, but I want you to follow along with how God does it, and how God does it right on time to the very day. See? That's why there's no such thing as prophecy speeding up. That's only apparent in our eyes. Process is slowing down. Prophecy is slowing down. No, doesn't happen. You're right on time. Okay, just our stinking thinking. Okay, now, when properly understood, which you will find here in the book, Jesus began his ministry, and we'll see it in just a bit, on the Day of Atonement in 26 A.D., on the Day of Atonement, 26 A.D., that began a Jubilee year. Is that not the time for the gospel to be preached, a Jubilee? We'll cover it here in just a little bit. Guess what day of the week that Day of Atonement was on? 26 A.D., a Wednesday. How about that? Let's fast forward to the crucifixion. When did Jesus die? On the Passover day, correct? What day of the week was that day? A Wednesday. Hello? Does God do things on time and parallel? Yes. All right. Let's follow along with just a couple of other things that we have in the book. God brought the children of Israel to him, to Mount Sinai, and on Pentecost, he gave the law. Okay? When did the church begin? On Pentecost. Okay? When are the 144,000 sealed? 144,000 sealed. It has to be on next to the last Pentecost. That's the 50th day harvest of God. See how all that fits in? You have seven churches, which represent the 7 weeks in the harvest of the churches, but the harvest isn't finished until day 50. That's the 144,000 great innumerable multitude of Revelation 7. Okay? See how nice that works together? You go one more year, and you come to Pentecost. The church began on Pentecost. It is raised to immortality on Pentecost. So look at what we have, how God uses the holy days, see? Isn't that amazing? Okay. Now let's come back and tie some of these things together. Now, let's come to Daniel, the 9th chapter. Now, Daniel 9 is a little hard to find in this Bible, so I'll give you the page number, 860... or 61, Daniel 9, okay? Now, why is Daniel clear out here before Ezra and Nehemiah? Well, because in the time frame it was written before Ezra and Nehemiah, okay? Daniel, the 9th chapter. Now, Daniel 9 contains an awful lot. It tells us some things that are going to happen. It tells us some things that are going to be way into the future. So let's begin here, Daniel 9 and verse 24. 70 weeks are decreed upon your people and upon your holy city. Now notice, to finish the transgression, to make an end of sin, to make reconciliation for iniquity, to bring in everlasting righteousness, and to seal up the vision and prophecy, and to anoint the most holy. Now, those are not all necessarily in chronological order. Now, notice, let's go back and look at it. To finish the transgression, what is the transgression? Where did that take place? Adam and Eve. As an Adam, we all die, right? As an Adam, we all have the law of sin and death, correct? Yes. Did all of that end when Christ died on the cross? No. See? So this projects way out, doesn't it? Okay. To make an end of sin. When is sin ended? When does sin come to an end? Lake of fire. Lake of fire. So that's projected way out. Okay. To make reconciliation for iniquity, that started with Jesus' resurrection from the dead. To bring in everlasting righteousness, that's not going to happen until New Jerusalem comes, right? So see how far out this goes. And that's what project in the last part of the book, because we have the appointed time of the Messiah's return, part one and part two, and we go through a lot of the book of Revelation, okay? To seal up the vision and the prophecy, it's not done until everything is completed. And to anoint the most holy. Well, when was Jesus anointed? Keep that in mind. Write that down. We'll answer it a little later. Let's go on with the rest of the description of the 70-week prophecy. Know therefore and understand that from the going forth of the commandment to restore and to build Jerusalem to Messiah the Prince shall be 7 weeks. Stop. And 60 weeks, stop. Okay? Now, you go back, there are several decrees about the temple, and you have to get the right one. That's why you need to have the chronology of the kings of Persia and Media and Babylon and Assyria all straightened out, because many of them were called Ahasuerus. Which Ahasuerus? When was the decree given? Okay. Now, most of those, and I did in the, if you have, how many here have the first edition of the Harmony of the Gospels? Okay. I did not understand any of this when I wrote it. And the church taught at that time that the 70 weeks ended with Jesus' crucifixion. It doesn't. See? Completely missed the point. We'll explain it. Okay? Now, the weeks here are called heptads. H-E-P-T-A-D-S. Heptads. Now, what is a heptad? A heptad equals 7 years. So instead of 7 days, it's 7 years. So you take 7 times 7, how many years do you end up with then? 49. That's exactly how long it took to build and restore Jerusalem. So we account for the first 7 years. And 62 weeks. Now, the 62 weeks does not begin exactly when the 7 weeks ends. That's the key. There is a break. And there are intervening years between the end of the 49 years and the beginning of the 62 times 7. What's that? 434. Thank you. Okay. Good math. Did you get A in math? Okay. Okay. 434 years. Okay. Now, of the 70 weeks, it says, it shall be built again, that is Jerusalem, with streets and the wall, even in troublous times, and that's recorded there in Ezra and Nehemiah. And now notice this, very important, verse 26. And after 62 weeks, Messiah shall be cut off, but not for himself. Stop. After. After means away from, not at the end of, but after. So there's a space of time. We'll see what that is a little bit. We have it in the book. So if you hear me say it's in the book, this is propaganda to get you to read it. Okay. Next sentence. And the people of the prince, or the prince of the people, who shall come, that is not Christ. See? Shall destroy the city. Did Jesus himself destroy the city? No. And the sanctuary. But his end shall be with the flood, and unto the end of the war desolations are determined. All right. Verse 27. This does not apply to Jesus. This applies to the prince of the people or the coming beast. Okay? And this is talking about the 70th week. And the 70th week does not occur until the beast comes on the scene and makes that covenant. Now, we got the prophecies of it there out of Daniel 10 and 11. Okay? He shall confirm a covenant, not the, a covenant with many for 1 week. So, let me ring my cowbell. Here it is. You look at Jerusalem today. Now we know, how do we know another temple has to be built? Okay, let's do this. We'll stop right here for just a minute, and we're going to put ourselves in John's shoes, the Apostle John. Now the Apostle John was the longest lived apostle. He was also of the priestly line. He is the one responsible for canonizing the New Testament. He probably had Peter, Andrew, and Mark with him. John saw everything, beginning with the ministry of Christ, to the crucifixion, to the beginning of the church, to the destruction of Jerusalem, to the time after Jerusalem. Here he's got all the manuscripts there ready to go. He has just received the vision of, called the Apocalypse in Greek, or the Book of Revelation. Now, when he was given that book of Revelation, there are some scholars who said, well, he had a first edition of it. He was on the Isle of Patmos, and that's when it started, and it continued until the end of it. Okay? He was probably 96 years old at that time. So here he gets the vision of the book of Revelation. And in Revelation 11, he's told, measure the temple and the court, but leave out the outer court, for it's given over to the Gentiles. Now, John saw in vision that there was a temple, but he knew what of the existing temple? That it was destroyed 30 years before, approximately. This alerted him to the fact there had to be another temple. Plus, what else did he have with him? He had Paul's second epistle to the Thessalonians. What do you have in the second chapter of Thessalonians? The man of sin, the son of perdition, who does what? He goes into the temple of God and says he is God and that he is worshipped above everything, every idol, everything that is called God. Okay, here's John. He's looking back at the events. He knew that Jesus said the great tribulation will not start until there's the abomination of desolation standing in the holy place, correct? He also knew that that did not happen with the destruction of Jerusalem the first time, because he was alive and knew what happened. There was no man to go in there, no Gentile to go in there and say, I am God. See? That's why we have, in at least in the commentary or appendix of the New Testament, we have there that Titus got up when they finally conquered it. Titus got up on Fort Antonio wall and looked down into the temple area, and it was just stacked with dead bodies, and you know, it was the most horrible thing. And he said, we could not have conquered this without the help of God. No man of sin, son of perdition, went into the holy place. So here's John. How do I reconcile these things that God told me to write, but I don't understand them? Okay? Hold your place here in Matthew 9. Let's go to Matthew 24. Matthew 24. He knew from the vision in Revelation 11 that there had to be another temple. But when was it going to be built? Because he knew the temple was destroyed. He knew there was no abomination of desolation that went into the holy place. He knew that he was giving all the prophecies concerning the return of Christ. Okay? So Matthew 24. Now, we've been through this a lot. I've mentioned this before. But in the light of how I'm explaining it now, it'll have perhaps a little more meaning to you. All right. One more page over, Fred. There we go. Okay. Let's pick it up here in verse 14. Now, here's also something that Jesus said. Now, as I said in a sermon recently, take Matthew 24 and use it for this generation. This time, not then. Those things happened in type. They always come in cycles. But this is going to be everything fulfilled all at once at the end. All right. And this gospel of the kingdom shall be preached in all the world. There's that third word I told you to keep in mind. All. See? For a witness to all nations. Well, they couldn't understand that. But today we can, can't we? Yes. And then the end shall come. God doesn't tell us about how long this witness is going to be. So we don't know. We need to be about doing what God wants us to do. Okay? Therefore, when you see the abomination of desolation, which was spoken of by Daniel the prophet standing in the holy place. Now notice this next parenthetical statement. Jesus did not say this because he was talking. How did this get in there? This next phrase. It's in parentheses. John put it there because he didn't understand it, but he knew there was a time that it would be understood, because Daniel, the 12th chapter, says, and at the time of the end, none of the wicked shall understand, but the wise shall understand. So he put this statement in there. The one who reads what is written. It doesn't say the one who hears what I'm saying. See? The one who reads, let him understand. So John is saying by this, I don't understand it. This is for you in the future, whoever is going to get this. Okay? Now, so when we come back to Daniel, the 9th chapter, okay? And the prince of the people who shall come, verse 26, shall destroy the city and the sanctuary. That is future during the last week, the 70th week, the last 70 years, or correction, the last 7 years. Beg your pardon. Okay? Now, I can imagine this, because we're getting closer to it. Look at what is happening. So I'll ring my cowbell again. And then we'll take a little break and we'll come back to Daniel 9 after the break. Okay. I can imagine this. Think what would happen if the Jews tried to build their temple today. they would immediately have 100 million Muslims storming in there, shooting, killing, destroying. And besides, the Mosque of Omar is not where the temple originally stood. That was the territory of the Roman Empire, Fort Antonio. And down from that was the temple area. You know, the Jews pray at the Wailing Wall. And I'll tell you a little joke and we'll end here and we'll come back. Temple area was down from that. And the Jews have yet to understand where it's going to be built, and I'll explain it to you. But one man went up to an old man who was praying at the Wailing Wall, the Western Wall. And he said, "Do you come here often to pray?" He said, "Yeah, I come every day." And he says, "How long have you been doing this?" He says, "For 60 years. He said, "Well, what do you pray about?" He says, "Well, I pray for peace. I pray that the Messiah will come." He says, "And I pray that God will preserve his people and the city of Jerusalem." And he says, "Well, what does that feel like?" Well, he says, "Well, sometimes it's like talking to a wall."